There was a mighty nation, blessed above all of creation. It was a rare and precious pearl, conceived in faith and liberty, home of the brave, land of the free. It was the envy of the world. But this shining city on a hill has turned from the Creator's will and let evil take control. Now the reckless men who lead them want to strip away their freedom and to steal their very soul. Now it's smoke and mirrors, switching bait, criticize and confiscate, and let the guilty walk away. In this once righteous, godly nation, in the halls of education.
Welcome back, Resurrect the Republic, RTR Reloaded on RBN. Folks, I want to share with you, and I want to promote this. First of all, you have to reach out to Pruitt Tree Resin. Pruitt Tree Resin is something that I've been using now. I wanted to use it before I got behind it, but I've used it several times now, and it is just a wonderful product. You know, we'll put the links to this and also in the body of our podcast. Big supporter of our network. Supporting them is supporting us. Also in the link there, you can find paypal.me/RTR Truth Media to support this broadcast. And one other place that I want to get behind is Prager University seems to be a very interesting concept for education. They did a piece on the Southern Poverty Law Center. And if, Mike, when you have that clip ready, I'd like to roll that clip on Prager University. Okay, roll that clip.
Shutting down people you don't agree with is about as un-American as you can get. Rigorous debate, honest discussion, open exchange of ideas, that's the American way. But free thinking and speech are threatened today by a group with a sweet-sounding name that conceals a nefarious purpose. This group is called the Southern Poverty Law Center, or SPLC. Originally founded as a civil rights law firm in 1971, the SPLC reinvented itself in the mid-80s as a political attack group. Every year now, it produces a new list of people and charities it claims are extremists and haters. Aided by glowing coverage from the establishment media, the SPLC's hate list has become a weapon for taking individuals and groups they disagree with and tarring them with ugly associations. The SPLC employs a two-pronged strategy. First, find a handful of crazies with barely any followers, no address, and no staff, and blow them up into a dangerous movement, proof that there are neo-Nazis lurking everywhere. On their notorious hate map, the SPLC lists 917 separate hate groups in the U.S. No one has even heard of more than a handful of them. The second strategy of the SPLC is to undermine legitimate political voices that they oppose by associating them with extremists like the KKK. Take the charity known as the Alliance Defending Freedom. The SPLC lists them as a hate group. Is that fair? Well, the ADF has a network of 3,000 attorneys from all across the U.S. who've donated more than 1 million volunteer hours in defense of religious liberty. They've had a role in 49 victories at the U.S. Supreme Court. Putting the Alliance Defending Freedom on a list with 130 Ku Klux Klan chapters is not only wrong, it's malicious. According to the SPLC, one of the most influential social scientists in the U.S., Charles Murray, is a, quote, white nationalist. Ayaan Hirsi Ali, perhaps the most eloquent spokesperson for the rights of Muslim women, is to the SPLC a toxic anti-Muslim extremist. Scores of other individuals and charities active in mainstream conservative or religious causes have likewise been branded by the Southern Poverty Law Center as threats to society. Mind you, it is entirely fair to disagree with any of those folks, but it is utterly unfair to call them haters or extremists. The largest category listed by the SPLC as extremists, with 623 entries, covers groups like the Tea Party organizations that are wary of centralized government. Last time we checked, favoring smaller government was a mainstream and perfectly honorable American tradition. What is not honorable is the course prescribed by a leader of the SPLC, Mark Potok, who was caught on video proclaiming the organization's true intentions. He told a group of supporters, quote, The press will describe us as monitoring hate groups. I want to say plainly that our aim in life is to destroy these groups, to completely destroy them. Portraying someone with political views different from your own as a public menace is bullying, and it's a dangerous game. Instead of reducing hate and violence, the SPLC's name-calling directly incites it. In March 2017, Charles Murray was trying to discuss his acclaimed book, Coming Apart, at Middlebury College, when he was violently attacked by protesters inflamed by the SPLC's labeling of him as a racist. A professor escorting Murray ended up in the hospital. In 2012, a gunman attempted mass murder at the Family Research Council and failed only because the first man he shot managed to disarm him. The attacker told the police he acted because the SPLC had listed the Family Research Council as a hate group. It's a vicious irony. While promoting itself as a monitor of hate groups, the SPLC has in practice become a fomentor of hate. Yet the group rolls on, bigger than ever. What keeps them going? For one thing, the establishment media constantly quote them. Scare stories about right-wing stormtroopers are a sure way to attract eyeballs and fit nicely with the media's own preconceptions of the dangerous reactionaries lurking out there in middle America. Second, alarmism is a great fundraising technique. Convincing people there are fascists everywhere has turned the SPLC into a cash machine. Last year, the group hustled $50 million out of frightened liberal donors, adding to the $368 million of assets they were already sitting on. So, the next time you see the Southern Poverty Law Center quoted in the news, just remember, the masterminds behind the SPLC aren't eliminating hate, they are fueling it. I'm Carl Zinsmeister for Prager University.
And I'm Tom Lacavera Stewart, and I endorse that message. Oh, man, I don't think I could have done a peel down. That's why I shared it with you. I'm very impressed. Very, very impressed with Prager University. What is this that you just sent me, Lori? Go ahead, Mike.
I was just going to say, check out my video with the late Jim Floyd called Blinded by the Lies. We got the permission of the artist to use the song Blinded by the Lies as the intro to it. I'm trying to, all of a sudden I can't remember that guy's name. He's from out in Washington State. He did a whole bunch of patriotic songs. But Jim Floyd went into the archives of Alabama's divorce court and got the accusations against Morris Sleaze in the divorce proceedings against him by his wife, Maureen. And she says that he used to knock off during lunch and go down to the river and smoke pot and skinny dip with some of the people working there. I was in Montgomery, Alabama, and I would be conservative to say $400,000 worth of marble and waterfall and stuff like that has been spent on their on the front of their building right across from the Capitol. It's pretty prime real estate down there where their headquarters are. But that guy's right on the money with them. They're not out to just monitor stuff. They want a, they really Morstese's fantasy was to have arrest powers where he could get have gun carrying people go in and arrest people that he deemed to be yes. haters. They actually have cataloged more black supremacist hate groups than white supremacist hate groups.
Well, and the funny thing is that Morstese began his career, and he was quoted several times about the money-making aspects of what his what he really envisioned. He began defending the KKK because that's where the money was back in those days in the 60s, I believe it was. And when the Civil Rights Act passed and the tides kind of turned, he saw where the money was, and he left the KKK and the defense of the KKK behind, and he switched sides. So, you know, I question any authenticity about this organization whatsoever.
Well, they, for a long time, really, the FBI yeah. just took all of their investigative files and put them in their own files as it, almost as if they investigated themselves. They had kind of quasi-status with the FBI, but I think it's been about maybe 5 years ago or something, they had some kind of a falling out with the FBI.
They had to pull it. Because there were people that were associated with the FBI that were members of some of the groups that these folks were labeling, and that just wasn't going to sit right.
But you never know. I've tried to tell people over and over again, when you're involved with any of these type of groups, be it a militia or whatever, you just have no idea who's an agent or a double agent or who's going to get turned because they've got some blackmail, you know, dirt on them and stuff like that. So.
Yeah,
anyway, I'm not trying to toot my own horn, but I think, you know, this kind of stuff that I was hired to do, video production type work, is what made me a bit of a target way back then. And I think that when you're a member of the press, do you have a degree in journalism or anything?
No, I don't have a degree, but I'll put it to you this way. I went to a school that was accelerated. There were about seven people in my class, in my 10th grade, 11th grade class.
There's policy issues with the bureaucracies and the alphabet agencies when they are dealing with what they consider to be a member of the press, and that would include people that have like 10,000 Twitter followers, and you become like wait a minute, we got press issues here. Their policy shifts and how that they deal with people that are considered press. And so that may be a factor how you know, your situation with trying to cover the Malheur stuff. And has anybody brought up U.S. versus Lopez in any of these proceedings?
I don't recall seeing it.
Well, that needs to be brought up because there's academic papers. People have got their master's and doctorate, you know, academic law degrees based on theses written on U.S. versus Lopez. It's seriously impacted the Commerce Clause, and it's just sitting there not being used. The people and I have to wonder if that's not a factor in the mistrial, because they don't really have much of a leg to stand on. This guy I was telling you about earlier, Perry Clark, went around Frankfort, Kentucky, trying to, you know, going from one agency to another, and he kept getting the runaround. Where is the permission from the state government that's been granted for these lands to be occupied? And he was specifically talking about the National Forest. And when you're dealing with parks, you know, forts, magazines, arsenals, other needful buildings, post offices, that kind of stuff, the federal government has exclusive jurisdiction.
Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17,
exactly. But the Commerce Clause has been increasingly abused since especially the late 1940s.
Tell me about it. I'm sitting here because of the Commerce Clause, my friend.
Well, the U.S. versus Lopez case, start reading up on that, and they are somehow trying to send that, what I've heard called the mountain demur. They're trying to pretend that that ruling did not happen. Is it seriously dents the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, Bureau of Land Management, the U.S. Forest Service, and the Commerce Department in general, U.S. Department of Agriculture? They're all in jeopardy for abuses of the Commerce Clause with that one ruling. So,
because isn't that the one that is about the Gun-Free School Zones Act?
That was the argument that the government had. That law was valid, that they could overlay federal jurisdiction around a school. Well, schools are independent to the local district,
right?
And they have a local school board. They're locally incorporated in the county which they originate. Some state laws allow the state government to oversee them, but just because they get some federal funny money does not give the federal government jurisdiction over them. They're not a Fort Magazine, arsenal, other needful building. When they tried to pass a law that said you cannot have a gun within 1,000 yards of school, that got struck down because the government's argument was that it affected interstate commerce, and the court said no. And so the states had to go behind that and pass their own laws on however many feet that they said you couldn't have a gun within so many feet of school. But that,
right.
You know, that struck down the abuse of the Commerce Clause, and it's a pretty radical ruling that's being pretty much ignored by a lot of people, including the, you know, quote, patriot movement. Mm-hmm. But there's some academic papers written about that and on how was going to affect things, and it's not happening.
Now you lit a fire up under my butt on that. Lori, can you pull that case over for me?
We are under 30.
Oh, sure.
The other situation is we're under 31 national emergencies now. And so that's what I think, that's where they got to be made to blink, is these national emergencies that the president signs are specific. And when you're under a national emergency, there's all of these provisions in the code that comes into play. One of the things that should be in play, but it's not, in the mid-1990s, they changed the code for broadcasting all throughout the Cold War. If there was a war or a national emergency, you didn't have to fool with the broadcast license. You didn't have to worry about renewing it. But sometimes during the 1990s, they snuck in an amendment to the code to change that. But we're under 31 freaking national emergencies. Where's the intent of, we got a runaway rogue government here. Why do I have to worry about having a broadcast license? We're dealing with a power government. The pot calling kettle black over? How can they call me a pirate? We tried to renew our licenses, and they're coming after us with both barrels, man. They're trying to fine me $10,000 a day if I keep a transmitter on the air that we tried to renew the license on in 2004, and they played like they didn't take our money. So, and we never were in interstate commerce anyway. We're low-power TV, so their jurisdiction to begin with was kind of questionable. I've done everything I could to stay out of interstate commerce and be local, which was the original intent.
I don't blame
original
you.
Intent. So the original intent of low power was to be, you know, for underserved rural local communities. I'll let you go, guys, but you're hitting on a lot of cylinders that I've been hitting on for 20-some years.
Well, I'd like to coordinate with you, and maybe we can work together, because you have a lot of background and a lot of knowledge in that area, and we could use help.
Well, we all could. I mean, we're going to have to stick to what's the old saying from the Revolutionary War? We'll all have to hang together or we'll hang separate.
That's right. That's right.
I'll talk to you later, man. Thanks.
All right. God bless you. Oh, that's I love calls like that. Chris.
To Mike's point there and some of your conversation that strikes a chord with me, one thing in particular, the BLM was never set up to own land as they falsely claim. They're merely holding it in custody or custodial care, stewardship, for the benefit and ends of we the people, whenever it's ceded back to the places it's supposed to be. This is something they don't like to pay attention to, but that's factual operation that the BLM was set up. It used to be formerly the Land Management Bureau or Department, and then it became the Bureau of Land Management after that. Also, my friend that I presently hanging out with has a really intriguing video that apparently the Big Park Service produced that's choreographed and has a really catchy tune to it, and it's really a oppression movie about the BLM, the Forest Service, and how they deal with people throwing off their land, eminent domain abuses, and sold up their private property for BLM or the Forest Service, maybe sometimes the Forest Service.
Let's see if we can get Chris in on a clean signal there. We'll be right back after a few words from our sponsors, folks.
Hey, can we talk about something serious for a minute? Your age. Getting old has its perks. But remember, being a few years younger, you know, your hair was thicker, you didn't have so many wrinkles, that extra weight wasn't haunting you, and you just felt better. Well, we can't turn back the clocks and go back 10 or 15 years, but you can start feeling and looking 10 or 15 years younger with Nature's Youth RSF. It's a doctor-formulated daily supplement that helps your body maintain its peak performance and fight the aging process. Imagine sleeping better, looking better, and feeling better. See how Nature's Youth RSF has helped thousands of people just like you at naturesyouth.com. Naturesyouth.com. The holidays are coming. Imagine how it will feel when your family and friends are asking you what you did to look so good. Your secret will be Nature's Youth RSF. It's time to start looking better and feeling better. Learn more and order your Nature's Youth RSF at naturesyouth.com. That's naturesyouth.com.
know there is an ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus magful clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
Resurrect the Republic, Truth Radio broadcast on RBN, folks. It's been a very interesting show. Always call in 1-800-913-9443. I think I got that right. I always mess that up. But feel free to call in. We're trying to stay on topic here, folks, for tonight, if you don't mind. So if you have something you want to relay in relation to the information we're sharing tonight, please call in. Lori, you were talking with me about the treaties, and I think that that's a pretty good idea if we touch upon those treaties that are affecting us. So you want to go there?
Right, absolutely. Because a lot of times we're seeing, as the gentleman was talking about, you're seeing it in the communities, you're seeing it in the states. And you're right, the treaties are supposed to be compliant with the supreme law of the land, the Constitution. If they're not, they're a nullity, they're void. And I don't know if many people have heard of this, but Givens v. Ogden, the court held that certain New York statutes that granted an exclusive right to use steam navigation on the waters of the state were null and void insofar as they applied to vessels licensed by the United States to engage in coastal trade. Now, Chief Justice Marshall wrote, quote, "In argument, however, it has been contended that if a law passed by a state in the exercise of its acknowledged sovereignty comes into conflict with a law passed by Congress in pursuance of the Constitution, they affect the subject and each other, like equal opposing powers. But the framers of our Constitution foresaw this state of things and provided for it by declaring the supremacy not only of itself, but of the laws made in pursuance of it. The nullity of an act inconsistent with the Constitution is produced by the declaration that the Constitution is the supreme law. The appropriate application of that part of the clause which confers the same supremacy on laws and treaties is to such acts of the state legislatures as do not transcend their powers, but though enacted in the execution of acknowledged state powers, interfere with or are contrary to the laws of Congress made in pursuance of the Constitution, or some treaty made under the authority of the United States. In every such case, the act of Congress or the treaty is supreme, and the law of the state, though enacted in the exercise of powers not controverted, must yield to it. So what he is saying is, if the state is usurping the power, then yes, the Constitution stands. If the treaty usurps the power, the Constitution stands. However, if it is contrary to the Constitution, then no, it is null and void. And there you have it,
Tom. Which is consistent. It's consistent with everything. Oh, by the way, we have to stop quoting law, because didn't you know the SPLC has determined us to be anti-government?
I would like for one day them to actually wake up and realize we are the government. How can we be anti-RL?
Oh, they're plenty awake. They're just Marxists. That's what Marxists do.
Oh, isn't it? Oh, and they make a lot of money doing it, Tom.
Oh, yeah, they do.
Oh, yeah.
They're not impoverished, that's for sure.
Oh, no, it's not. They are raking in the bucks, according to an article in October the 7th, 2012. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And that article goes into speaking about how much money that they have raked in. And it is really interesting. It says, SPLC's co-founder Morris Deves has been harshly criticized by former SPLC employees, a former business partner, and many liberal critics. They see him as little more than a rake opportunist, and the SPLC's chief purpose is raising money for SPLC coffers. Though trained as a lawyer, Dee is best known for his fundraising ability. I know everyone's shocked. Raising $25 million for George McGovern presidential campaign in 1972, and his payment was the donor list, the gold mine that boosted SPLC's funding. So here's some numbers for our listeners. With over $238 million in net assets, the SPLC is one of the wealthiest nonprofit organizations in the United States. Despite this massive endowment, though, the center devotes almost 20% of its $34.5 million operating expenses, $6.5 million in 2011, to fundraising, which this also includes $1 million for fundraising services and $5.5 million in fundraising staff salaries and administrative expenses.
And we'll be right back. I love you, Lord. We'll be back. Resurrect Republic. Resurrect Republic Truth Radio broadcast on RBN.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Hey.
Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong part, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll-free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
For the past 14 years, it's been my privilege to host the National Intel Report on RBN, to offer a platform to interview exceptional guests, to provoke critical thought, and examine evidence, whether real, fake, or somewhere in between, and allow our audience to call in and participate with your input and questions in order to help us all reach an educated decision and arrive at our own truth. Our world has changed. It's now been turned on its head. Real is now considered fake, and mainstream fake is now pushed as real, rather than any clear thinking, consensus, or rationale.
Those few remaining beacons of light, the ones still shining through the mainstream media lies, propaganda, and deception, are being viciously attacked at every level through attempts at censorship, threatening advertisers, jailing hosts, and even killing journalists brave enough to speak the truth to you. We are in a war for our very freedom and existence, and through these despicable acts, freedom haters, collectivists, and communitarians have shown they will stop at nothing to blot out these last few beacons of light. Truth is becoming increasingly more difficult to unmask, just as the term unmasking itself is spoken by those usually anonymous sources. They promote their lies, wishing to mask the truths by ignoring it, vilifying it, or conspiratorializing it into a black hole abyss.
Regrettably, RBN has reached the tipping point, and through internal audit and actuarial review, it has now been determined that the only life raft of survival to this network is to go the way of PBS, that being audience-supported. Like a cornered animal, the left with veracity is pulling out all the stops with every effort to effectively blacken our beacon forever. Help us, folks. Help yourselves. Don't let our light stop shining. Our motto has always been, because you can handle the truth. It's time to review your budget, folks. If you want the truth to keep flowing through RBN, go to republicbroadcasting.org and become a regular monthly donor of 30, 40, 50, or 100 or more a month and ensure you keep the truth flowing.
Try not to get worried, try not to turn on to problems that upset you out. Don't you know everything's all right? Yes, everything's fine, and we want you to sleep well tonight.
Resurrect the Republic. Truth Radio broadcast on RBN. Yes, we want you to sleep well tonight. We do. I don't know if you're going to be able to after all this news, but we want you to. I'll just give it all over to God. It'll all be good. Anyway, you wanted to finish sharing something before we got to our prophets of hate and my exclamation point on the SPLC. So go ahead on.
Yes, absolutely. So, in quoting this article from 2012 that exposed the Southern Poverty Law Center and how much money they're raking in, it also stated, meanwhile, the group spent only $11 million on its supposed primary mission. Now, if you don't know what that primary mission is, it's, quote, providing legal services to victims of civil rights, injustices, and hate crimes, unquote. The center spent an astounding $12.5 million maintaining publishing and promoting its, quote, hate list propaganda, including a program to, quote, educate, unquote, children, according to its 2010 tax return.
The wonderful indoctrination. That's great.
Mm-hmm. So the SPLC received $36 million in contributions in 2011. Excess contributions and investment income allowed the center to boast assets by $9.4 million. Its 2010 tax return shows the SPLC realized a net gain of $28.8 million. Now, SPLC boasts many high-dollar donors. You ready for this? The top 10, Picower Foundation, $3,813,112. Dollars from 1999 to 2008. Cisco Systems Foundation, $1,620,000 from 2001 to 2004.
Oh, Prospect, say it family, isn't so.
Yeah. Prospect Family Foundation, $1,600,000, 2007 to 2011. Grove Foundation, $875,000, 2001 to 2011. Rice Family Foundation, $535,000, 1999 through 2010. Oh, here you go. Here's a familiar name. Rockefeller Philanthropy, $510,000, 2008 through 2010. Unbound Philanthropy, $500,000, 2006 to 2010. Public Welfare Foundation, $500,000, from 2008 to 2010. The Vanguard Charitable Endowment, $469,120, from 2006 to 2011. Rocking Moon Foundation, $350,000, 2006 to 2010. And the Jewish Community Fund, $347,000, $274, from 1999 to 2010. And there you have it, Tom.
That doesn't surprise me. Folks,
you know, Tom.
Yeah.
Before you launch into your revelation about the SAPLC, my perception, and I think it's an accurate one, is they are foreign and domestic terrorist organizations, a hate group, and perhaps practicing apartheid here in America in a crusade against all that is held true and dear in this foundational republic that we live in, committing war and seditious conspiracy to undermine the republic and therefore in treason.
Yes, under this new, I would agree.
Executive order of Trump, seems to me like they should seize all those assets and expatriate those people from the U.S. or imprison them.
Oh, I feel so. We're going to discuss that on a different night, but that executive order, let me tell you, while people are fear-mongering about that executive order, don't fear it. Embrace it. I've researched.
Oh, you're talking about the latest one?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's hard for me to embrace executive orders, but, you know, it's just...
We'll discuss on a different night. We must stay on topic.
I know.
So if you would...
Hold on, Chris. Go ahead.
Well, what I was trying to describe to you earlier when I had the traveling noise is the BLM, or the Department of Land Management, as it was originally set forth, was never intended to own land. They merely hold it and beneficent custodial care, stewardship, for the beneficent ends of we, the people, whenever the lands are eventually ceded back to the states they lay within on their statehood, which is what should have taken place. But the federal beast system likes to keep things under their purvey. And I was trying to tell you, there was this really, really wonderful video that I saw that was produced about 25 years ago, 10 minutes. It was basically a production video called Big Park Service. And it was about the BLM, and they had wonderfully choreographed BLM agents and actors and singers and almost doing a dance production, but they were mugging grandpa and grandma and their grandbaby on their porch on their land out in the middle of nowhere and stealing it for the BLM to convert it to one of their Forest Service or BLM Ranger. It was Big Park Service, so it's probably the Ranger Service that produced it. But it was very akin to what the BLM does with their militant tactics and high-handed, oppressive, violent, abusive tactics they've employed at both the Bundy Ranch and the Malheur Wildlife Refuge and other places. And further, I have observed many years of the BLM starting fires, supposedly for fire management control, that, oh, surprise, they always get out of control and burn up thousands of acres. Of course, they never find themselves. And, of course, the Hammonds burned up, 130 acres or something like that whenever their backfire got out of control,
yeah.
And they jammed it up their rear as far as they could. But they don't hold themselves to any accountability for their own malfeasance, disfeasance, and criminal destruction of private property. And with that,
or they intentionally burn down houses.
Yeah.
We've seen the video proof of it.
You know, I don't like to jump onto conspiracy theories that I can't prove. But it seems to me that since this Agenda 21, since things have been ratcheting up, there's an awful lot of fires that are wiping out. I don't know. It seems to me. I saw a special Anthony Hilder put out where there was a carload of people that they were environmentalists that they saw, and then the next day they were throwing Molotov cocktails out of the door of a car as they drove past, and they burnt. They end up saying it was a lightning strike. You know, I'm beginning to think. Yeah.
They call it Jewish lightning, I think.
Yeah, or the lightning of Lucifer or something. Yeah.
Incidentally, Tom.
Yes, sir.
Where you're going there precisely, if I can compose my thoughts, is absolutely insane, because these agencies are a lawless outlaw group. They're rogues, and they've been twisted and perverted and weaponized against we the people. And this has been going on for many years. And you were talking about Anthony Hilder. There was a point I was trying to get to, and I lost it somewhere getting to it, but I apologize. I'll let you guys go ahead and take off and play your pieces. We got about 20 minutes left to go. So let's go.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. We have y'all. Thank you, Chris.
Always,
always thank you. And folks, what I'm going to be playing for you is the beginning of something that we're going to put in the body of this podcast that I want you to go and check out for yourself. This is just a little teaser for the next few minutes of the show. It's called Prophets of Hate. The Southern Poverty Law Center.
If you believe in traditional marriage and historic Christianity, watch out. There's a powerful organization trying to marginalize you by designating you as a hater. And they could even put your life in danger. Who is this group, and how are they working to silence you? Find out on this special program.
The Southern Poverty Law Center is redefining what hate is.
The SPLC gave rise and gave fuel to the actions of this domestic terrorism.
Southern Poverty Law Center is not a neutral, reliable source on hate.
The Southern Poverty Law Center is irresponsible and reckless, and frankly, it results in putting people's lives in danger.
Welcome to the special program, Prophets of Hate, the Southern Poverty Law Center. Some remember that the Southern Poverty Law Center once did some good work in the waning days of the civil rights movement. But today, they have enlisted in the culture wars on the side of the radical left and have made enormous profits in the process. Yet this radical group is taken seriously by the media, educational institutions, and even law enforcement, while demonizing those who hold traditional Christian beliefs on marriage and sexuality as so-called hate groups, including this ministry, by the way. As we begin, we look at one case in which their designation led to frightening and potentially deadly consequences.
August 15, 2012, Floyd Lee Corkins walked into the lobby of the Family Research Council.
Leo Johnson, who was our building manager, was manning the front desk at that time and asked for some identification. This man, Mr. Corkins, reached into his backpack, and instead of pulling out identification, he pulled out a gun, which he aimed at Leo, and fired. Leo was wounded in the arm.
Leo wrestled him to the ground with one good arm, took his pistol away from him, and started to shoot him. And then Leo told us later that God told him not to shoot Floyd Lee Corkins.
The FBI told me.
What haters! I'm sorry, I had to interject.
His courageous, bold response saved many lives that day.
The would-be shooter had a backpack with 100 rounds of ammunition and 15 Chick-fil-A sandwiches.
So he had intended to kill as many people as he could and then smear Chick-fil-A sandwiches in their faces that day on August the 15th.
So this was 2 weeks after the Chick-fil-A Appreciation Day that some people may recall, when there was such a turnout across the country of support for Chick-fil-A because of their support for marriage.
What he objected to was our stand on traditional marriage. We had said that marriage is the institution between a man and a woman, and he was a volunteer for a local LGBT organization.
How did we respond to a man who came in to terrorize our building, who has since pleaded guilty to terrorism? Well, we've prayed for him. We've prayed that he might come to an understanding of the truth, the gospel of Jesus Christ.
Floyd Corkins was convicted of an act of domestic terrorism. This is the first terrorism conviction in the District of Columbia since the law was enacted after 9/11. When he was interrogated by the FBI, they asked him, how did you pick your target?
Now, how did you, this building, this organization, how did you find it early? Did you, like, look it up online, or how did you know about it?
They, Southern Poverty Law lists anti-gay groups. I found them online.
Southern Poverty Law Center is reckless in labeling groups as hate groups or labeling individuals as hate mongers, and they do both. They have no authority to do so.
The Southern Poverty Law Center needs to realize that they have blood on their hands. And it's not that they can't criticize us. We can take criticism. But the hate label is a slander, and it is an irresponsible slander, which in our case led directly to violence.
At the time of the shooting, several dozen homosexual groups denounced the violence, but there was never an apology from the Southern Poverty Law Center.
I can assure you, if someone who had once attended a Sunday school class had gone into a gay and lesbian organization and attempted to do what Mr. Corkins attempted to do in our building, we would still be hearing about it.
Meanwhile, Family Research Council's name is still listed on the Southern Poverty Law Center's hate map. So also is that of D. James Kennedy Ministries, because we proclaim what the Bible says about marriage and sexuality. Supposedly, we're also a hate group, according to the Southern Poverty Law Center.
They're a very dangerous organization. Not only dangerous from a standpoint that they inspired a gunman to come into our building, but dangerous because they are ready and willing and working to dispose of our First Amendment, and that is dangerous.
We thank God that no one was killed in that incident, largely due to the heroic actions of that brave building manager who was shot defending his colleagues. Later in this program, we'll provide an update on him. Yet despite the explicit admission of the shooter, Floyd Corkins, that he was inspired by the Southern Poverty Law Center's so-called hate map, the SPLC has never apologized for what happened. Nor have they removed the Family Research Council, D. James Kennedy Ministries, or many other like-minded groups from their hate map. More recently, a conservative congressman and three other people were shot by a man who, like Floyd Corkins, was a fan of the SPLC and had endorsed their page on Facebook. Yet their irresponsible and inaccurate rhetoric continues unabated. Just what is the Southern Poverty Law Center, and why is it doing these things? Dr. Jerry Newcomb takes a closer look.
I have a dream.
The Southern Poverty Law Center is an organization that began back during the Civil Rights era, in part to protect the rights of those who were being unjustly treated. However, what we have today is an organization that, in continuing its mission, has lost sight of some of the key principles that motivated, in particular, the Southern Christian leaders, the ministers, who were fighting for our unalienable rights.
In his classic letter from the Birmingham jail, Dr. King wrote, quote, "A just law is a man-made code that squares with the moral law of God. An unjust law is a code that is out of harmony with the moral law."
Martin Luther King Jr. often preached upon the fact that the impetus, the energy behind what they were doing in fighting for the civil rights of basically my dad's generation was grounded in God's Word, in the truth of God's Word.
The Southern Poverty Law Center is continuing to operate off of a reputation of the past in which they were focused on racist organizations. The name of the Southern Poverty Law Center is a little deceptive because the only thing impoverished about the Southern Poverty Law Center are their ethics. What they do is they simply go after and try to marginalize Christian organizations that speak about biblical morality. And they do nothing to help those who are poor in the South.
In fact, one particular case was a woman whose son had been beaten to death by the KKK. Morris Dees went in there, won the case. The woman got $54,000 as a result of the case, but Morris Dees ended up raising $9 million for the Southern Poverty Law Center. She did not get any of that benefit to the Southern Poverty Law Center.
This is an organization that has a massive endowment of, I think, $300 million. Much of it is kept offshore in offshore accounts in the Cayman Islands and so forth. And yet they exploit people, small donors and so forth, asking for money that they don't need in order to do things that are attacking people who they happen to disagree with ideologically.
At one time, Dr. Ben Carson, the renowned neurosurgeon, who is now the director of HUD for the Trump administration, ended up on the Southern Poverty Law Center's Profiles of Extremists of Hate.
Why would they put someone, a leader like Ben Carson, why would they put him on the hate list? Is it because of what the man has done? Has it been because how he has served, not only in the medical community, but outside the medical community? You know, what has he done? Or is it because of what the man believes, the foundation that motivates his life of service? If they have a problem with that, then that's what got him on the hate list.
The Southern Poverty Law Center is redefining what hate is. It's doing so first to raise money, and secondly, it's doing it in order to shut down all contrary opinion, which the First Amendment was designed to protect.
With an original mission of opposing groups like the Ku Klux Klan, the Southern Poverty Law Center did some good work decades ago, targeting lingering racism. But as the Klan diminished, the SPLC needed to find other ways to keep the donations flowing in. They have done this by designating traditional evangelical organizations as hate groups and plotting them on their so-called hate map and placing them on their list of extremists. There, you will find Klansmen and white supremacist David Duke standing right alongside evangelical Christian historian David Barton. It is a modern form of insanity that anyone would believe this. But the SPLC has found it profitable to scare up money from Northeastern liberals who have no firsthand acquaintance with any actual evangelical Christians. This would all be rather laughable, except that the Southern Poverty Law Center still wields enormous weight. John Rabe has more.
The Southern Poverty Law Center has a wonderful public relations operation where they have been able to sell themselves to the media, to the decision makers, to turn Americans against traditional values, against our Christian heritage.
The Southern Poverty Law Center has been extraordinarily successful in positioning itself as an unbiased arbiter of so-called hate groups, while disguising its extreme left-wing ideology.
Well, one of the ways that Southern Poverty Law Center gets its message out, it does so by being this respectable organization and has been very, very clever in going to law enforcement agencies and saying, look, we'll do some work for you. We'll determine who these hate groups are, and hate groups are typically associated with violence. We'll give you a heads up on who they are, and as a result of that, a lot of these police organizations look upon the Southern Poverty Law Center as a real source for them to help them in any crime prevention.
It's very dangerous whenever we have any organization that's referenced at all by any part of government for law enforcement, where the organization effectively tries to isolate a whole groups of people because of their faith, specifically isolate people who believe in biblical teachings, believe in the Bible, as somehow they're being a hate group or equivalent to the KKK. That's what they're attempting to do. And if they get away with it, you know, every church in America that teaches from Scripture and believes in the teachings of Scripture will be categorized on the same level as the KKK. And that would open the door for tremendous tyranny.
Well, one of the tactics of an organization like Southern Poverty Law Center, when they want to get their agenda across, is to mix true haters with faux haters, that is, ones who are made up in order to set a particular agenda. And so the agenda of the Southern Poverty Law Center is to take people who really aren't haters, who have just taken a position different from their own, and mixing them with true haters.
A few years ago, this slide on religious extremism was shown at a U.S. Army Reserve Equal Opportunity training briefing. First on the list was evangelical Christianity. Fifth on the list was Al-Qaeda. Where in the world did the U.S. Army officials putting on that training get their information? The answer, of course, is the Southern Poverty Law Center.
The media will cite whatever the Southern Poverty Law Center says as gospel truth. Once you can say that, somebody's on the SPLC's hate list, and if you're a journalist for the mainstream media, then you point out, yes, this group is on the hate list for the SPLC.
Unfortunately, they've been very effective in the mainstream media. Many reporters don't do their homework. They don't dig into the background of this organization and understand they have an agenda.
Just one example occurred when veteran CBS newsman Bob Schieffer interviewed Tony Perkins of the Family Research Council as the Supreme Court was hearing the same-sex marriage case.
And Ms. Perkins, I'm going to say this to you.
Well, folks, we're going to leave that clip with you in tonight's archive so you can spread it around and listen to it yourself. We'll be back again. Resurrect the Republic, Truth Radio broadcast on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Thank you for tuning in.
Thank you, guys. And as always, watch your backs, check your facts. Semper Fidelis, and have a wonderful night.
Amen.
I'm not interested in photo ops.